I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 462. Everything we've been withholding. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister, and I am by myself introducing this podcast because, well, it's been a holiday, so that can only mean one thing. It's time for a clip show. Yes, the time-honored tradition when we take some time off, but still want to give you some great oral pleasure. I said oral, you know, for your ears, not the other thing. Don't be dirty. Okay, but you can be a little dirty. But this podcast is only mildly dirty because we've collected some clips from shows that we've done recently where we were a little bit wordy and went over on time by, like, a bunch. So rather than just leave that comedic gold to be no place, we've decided we'd collect some of it in this here podcast. Enjoy!
That's enough tangents. Let's get into the stuff that's really enjoyable about our podcast, which is the video games, tech gadget, and anime stuff. Because we got a lot to talk about, and we probably won't get to all of it. So some of it's definitely going to end up in a clip show.
Okay, well, then
probably going to end up in like three clip shows.
Not three.
It could. It actually really could.
And I need to talk about the Xbox experience. So,
and talk about the experience first, because, like, I'm on my boyfriend's Xbox One, and he noticed it was different. I really didn't, because I just, you know, play games and pew, 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 so.
You don't actually look at the interface.
I was just like, oh, it's on. Here's the game I want to play. Whee!
So you didn't, like, notice how dramatically different it looked?
No. Nope.
Wow.
I gave zero about it, and he's like, this is different. And I'm like, is it?
Wow.
Not going to lie. I'm going to be honest.
I appreciate your honesty. So let's talk next. New Xbox One experience. It started rolling out on Tuesday and Wednesday to users for Xbox One. And when we talk about the experience, what we're talking about is basically the user interface, the dashboard. When you log in, a lot of people from the launch of the Xbox One had some very negative things to say about navigating the experience, right? Because as much as people, I guess, you always have to find something to complain about, right?
Right.
In the Xbox 360 land version, like, if you remember the navigation was simple. Like, you jumped in and you were, the first thing you saw was your games. Whether it was stuff that you downloaded, you had access to the arcade, you had access to games with gold, and you could play the thing that you were recently playing. Then one blade over, you had your friends, and you could scroll through and see everybody's avatar with a little background thing, whatever theme that they picked and whatever little accessory they had, and you could see what they were playing or whether it was watching Netflix or streaming or things like that. You went another panel over and you could get to demos and to the store, and then you went another panel over, it's music and so on and so forth, right? It was really, really easy to navigate and figure out where things were, so you knew where to go to get your thing, right?
Right.
From the launch, if you had a code or you needed to redeem something or downloading, you just tap left and boom, there was that menu to see all of your achievements and to download stuff or redeem a code. Like, it was simple, it was clean, and it was easy to navigate. And with the new Xbox One when it came out, because it was so focused on multimedia, it felt to a lot of people, myself included, so I'm putting my personal bias in here, very cluttered. And very difficult to figure out what was what. I had a hard time keeping track of when I was in a store looking at a demo versus looking at a video from, like, YouTube and whatnot. Even with the snap feature, trying to snap things that you wanted easy access to a panel, wasn't always a very clean interface. It was very big, it was very bloated, it was very clunky. And so a lot of times it kept people from exploring things because they didn't know how to get back to where they wanted to get to. Even with voice navigation, it wasn't always perfect. I ended up using nothing but my voice activation in the experience to get to what I wanted to. So I would have it drop me to games, I would have it drop me to demos, and then that was it. Like, I didn't explore anything else. I didn't even download any of the video streaming services on my Xbone because they were just too hard to get to. I like simple, I like easy, I like quick, and most people do. So the team at Microsoft really took all that feedback in. I give them credit for that, to try and create a better, cleaner dash that was easier to use. Because even they mentioned, you know, hey, when it's not easy to figure out how to start a party from your dashboard or from a game, that's a problem. When it's not easy to figure out how to add somebody to your game when you have multiplayer from the dash, that's a problem. When things stick in places that you don't want them to stick, that's a problem. So they really went back and took all that feedback in to try and create a cleaner, easier to navigate dash, and also one that was faster. Because that's one problem when you have a bloated dash, is that it does slow things down. So buffering time took forever to get things loaded. They were playing ads all the time. So the new Xbox One experience is really designed to not solve every problem with the dash that everyone has, because you can't please everyone, but to really make a cleaner dash that was really, really easy and fast to navigate. And I think that it's a really, really positive step in the right direction, because I've actually been exploring the dash since it launched. Which, okay, I didn't explore the dash before.
I didn't.
I stayed like on my main page, and I used voice commands to get to demos so I could download demos to play them. Or I just stayed on my main thing and said the told my Xbox to turn on a game, and that was it. And so I kept my connected just for that, because it was easier to get into a game that way than to try and navigate the dash to figure it out. I did not join parties because sometimes the audio didn't connect, and even when it did, sometimes it was lag and it would slow down my game. And so I never used Skype on it, none of that stuff. But they really have cleaned up the dash. So now when you drop in, basically what you're presented is full screen right in your face is the game that you played last. So you can, and it kind of functions like in a hibernate mode for the most part. So if you backed out to a title screen or to a save point, when you turn your system off, when you turn it back on, depending upon whether or not the game has autosave and various auto-loady things on, when you pop it up, you're right back where you started from. So for instance, for me, for Tomb Raider, if I back out to the title screen and I shut off my system, when I turn it back on, I'm right there at the title screen. I don't have to wait for it to load. It just stays there. I was like, hey, your profile's back. Let's do this. And I'm right back almost immediately into my game. I'd say it's probably like a 45-second wait from when I say I'm back to I'm Lara. So that's a huge improvement over find the game, click the game. Yes, I want to play the game. Okay, now the game is loading. Okay,
now do your I want to play this game dance and...
And
make your I'm going to play this game popcorn and get your Mountain Dew ready.
So right off of the homepage of it, big and clear in the middle, you're presented with the last activity that you've done. So if it's a game, it shows your game. And then right underneath that are the three most recent things that you've done. So if, let's say, you were playing Gears and Tomb Raider and watching Netflix, and the last thing you did was watch Netflix, Netflix will be in your main panel. And then right underneath that in the simple little rectangle block will be the last three games. So you can very quickly just down and hit it and jump right into it. So it is designed to quickly get you into the things that you were recently playing, assuming, hey, you want to pick up where you left off, which is right. So it's gorgeous. The tiles, they got rid of the live tile look of the Windows 10 environment, which is what the previous experience was really based off of. And while they keep everything still in rectangles, so they're still kind of tiley, it's still very clear what's what. And you're presented with, at max, like, six big visuals. You have a sidebar on the left, and the sidebar on the left basically has your friends lists, so you can see who's online, what they're playing very quickly with just their name and the name of the thing that they're doing. And then you can click on them to get more details, send them a message, start a party with them, whatever. You have your ability to start a party right off the sidebar. You have the ability to chat right off the sidebar. And then to bring in live video. So it's really cool that they focused on the things that they think people want to get to very quickly, which are friends, party messaging, your settings, and then if you want to use Snap to go to the center and set up what you want to snap. Across the top of the screen, you just have four major areas, and I'm so glad that we're back down to this. You have your home, which is what you start on. You have the community, so that's the what clips people are sharing and streaming, games with people that are going on, and then also any of your friends that have shared clips and leaderboards and all that kind of stuff. And then you have one guide, and the one guide is basically everything else. So that's where if you're streaming TV through your system, you can quickly get to that. All of the apps that you may want, that you've downloaded, so your Netflix, all that kind of stuff, all the media stuff is in one guide. So music buying, TV show, movie buying, live stream video, that's all in one guide, as opposed to being separate individual things. Much, much cleaner, much, much easier to navigate. And then you have the store. So that's where demos, add-ons, and games are. So it's much simpler and much cleaner to navigate. You can easily get to panels, and everything is super, super visual. It's nice and it's big. Everything has clean space around it, so it's easier to read, especially because it's basically gray on gray on black for the most part, unless you have like a theme running that changes some of the colors. So it can be a little difficult to see things sometimes, but because everything is so much bigger and everything has space around it, it is actually a little bit easier to see some of the things, which is nice. I still use my voice commands because I've gotten comfortable with them, but it has gotten smarter. So now I can tell it to, as it turns on, sign me in specifically by name, which is nice because I have my system set up to not automatically sign me in for a couple of reasons. Sometimes people think that they're funny when they come over because, you know, they know the voice commands. And so they'll start saying stuff when they walk in my living room because they think it's funny to get my stuff to turn on or whatever. And so I don't want people accidentally saying things to, like, buy things because I do have my credit card signed in. So, and everything, with the exception of, like, two things, unless they're over a certain price, I have set to just go ahead and buy. Oh. So, yeah. So I don't have it automatically signed in as me. I make it wait for me to say, I am me. But I like that I can actually say, I am me now. So instead of giving the first command to sign in and then saying, choose this person, I can now say, sign in as Rochelle. And it'll be like, boink. Awesome. So that's gotten smarter. And it is faster, I will say. You know, not just the navigation, but actually diving in and launching things is much faster in the new experience than the old experience. So for the most part, like, I'm really happy with this Dash. Like, if this had been the Dash that launched with my Xbox One, I might have actually gotten Destiny for my Xbox One.
Oh, for your Xbox One.
I might have.
Might. But we don't know, because that is a totally different timeline.
It is. Might, but it really is so much better. I'm very, very happy with the Dash. If you have been prompted to download it, definitely download it. Explore it. It's really good. Like, right now, I don't have anything negative to say.
I know, and you're trying to find something.
Because I like to be, you know, balanced. I don't want everything to be like shits and giggles and rainbows and unicorns. But sometimes things are shits and rainbows and unicorns. And
yeah.
The new Xbox experience is definitely a unicorn. Aww. They got it right. It's good.
Okay. I'll take your word for it because, yeah, I don't know.
You have a system that you could actually explore it. So
I could, but I'm too lazy.
Stop being lazy.
I don't wanna.
You can do it.
No.
And if you pair the Xbox experience with their new Elite controller,
Oh, well, I don't got the money for that either, so
I'm just saying, the world is your oyster.
But if you got all that shit, and if it doesn't, then...
Hey, I only got one Elite controller. Okay.
That's okay. One is more than my none.
And I'll tell you another thing. When you use the toggles, the panels underneath, especially when you're playing Tomb Raider, if you map one of them suckers to be her leap and grab thing, oh, it makes your life so much easier.
So...
It does, because then you're like, all right, go and leap, and I don't have to worry about hitting X to make you grapple, because I've programmed it to this button. So you will just do it when I flick my pinky. Yay, pinky flick.
We need to go back, because I thought we were talking about Steven Universe
today. We do need to talk about Steven Universe.
Yeah, yeah, so that's why I was trying to sum up, because I knew that was still waiting.
Yeah, because we do need to talk about Steven Universe, because we only, like, scratched the surface in
that.
Well,
like, you talked about... both experiencing it, but we didn't really think and say, hey, we're going to actually have a show dedicated to this. But I'm finally glad that someone has put it forth to us to talk about it, because I've wanted to talk about it since I watched the first season.
Well, because we didn't get to have the deep conversation, right? So we basically said, hey, guess what? I'm watching this week. I just marathoned Steven Universe, and Panda, you need to watch it because it's totally your type of shit. And here's a couple of reasons why, and you should watch it.
And then I went, hey, I'm going to go watch it.
You did. And I am so glad that we get to actually do this with a third person, because I think that I gravitate and what I pick up and why I love Steven Universe is probably completely different than the reason that you...
Maybe, but we are related.
Yeah. But we don't always agree. So it's going to be good to have an impartial third.
Especially considering the gender I am and the type of show this is. So.
Exactly.
It's not like we're talking about My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Fucking yeah, I got a friend of mine hooked on that one. She calls me her dealer.
You know, but it's a good one to be hooked on. I had to explain My Little Pony to a friend of mine at work who's younger than me. And it was really funny because she's like, oh, so you watch a cartoon about ponies. I'm like, it is about so much more than just ponies. She's like, okay. I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is like a whole movement. I actually convinced her to watch the documentary film, A Brony Tale.
Mm-hmm. It was on Netflix. I actually think anyone who's never watched it should watch that first before watching an episode.
I agree.
I think it opens up exactly what it's trying to, or what it accomplished, rather, what it attempted.
And one of the feelings and things that I had after I watched the first season of Steven Universe is, this is another thing that's going to get people to gravitate towards it so much that it will end up having its own cons as well. We've already seen people cosplaying at shows. From it, we've got a friend that's getting ready to do Garnet at another anime convention. It's so simple and silly, but also so honest.
Maybe you should start with the premise to set this up.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, basically, Steven Universe is a young boy in a little town.
Beach City!
Yes. Which is such a throwback to... all 80s sitcoms and things like that, because it reminded me of a bunch of different cartoons and TV shows that I watched growing up as a kid, where everybody lived in a city by the beach, or like every movie involved the summer at the beach and that kind of stuff. But Steven is a very energetic, very upbeat, super positive, no matter what, little boy. And it...
He's around like, what, 10, 11?
Yeah, like 10, 11.
Yeah.
And he doesn't live with his parents. His mom is gone, Rose Quartz. And his dad is basically a unaccomplished hippie.
He reminds me of one of my ex-boyfriends.
Yeah, he's literally the musician that runs the car wash.
Yes. And Steven lives by the ocean in a temple with the gems. Well, three of the gems. There's lots of gems, as you'll discover when you watch the show.
Spoilers?
What? There's lots of gems. They battle them all the time.
But Steven's living with the gems because, like Ninja said, his mom, Rose Quartz, was one of the gems and was the leader of the gems that he's now living with. And she literally gives up her physical form to give birth to Steven. So this is like a really big focal point in his development in the seasons with him, you know, learning about his mother, and the crystal's pretty much saying, well, you're kind of half gem, so we're going to teach you how to be a gem and come on adventures with us and, you know, learn how to harness your gem power, because he apparently...
Which is in his belly button.
Yep. He looks like a troll doll, but a very happy one.
He does.
And, I mean, in the first season, I mean, you're really just kind of getting a little bit of the backstory between this living arrangement between Steven and the gems, and you're learning a little bit about each of their personalities. And at first, I didn't really feel like for a team. I'm like, I don't know how this team is going to work. And you can clearly see that their dynamic is very, I don't want to say.
Organic?
I mean, it felt very natural. Like, you obviously have your know-it-all who feels like she knows everything in Pearl. And then you have your brash id of a character with Amethyst. And then you have like the super ego, which kind of keeps those two in check in.
Yeah, I never really put it in psychological terms though, but that actually works pretty well.
I sit too long with it. But in that, you don't really know where people sit and, you know, these characters sit really, and then how they're all going to have their influence on Steven. And I mean, with Steven not having a mom, and there are several touching episodes where, you know, for anyone who's ever experienced a disconnect with a parent or even might not even got to meet a parent, but then having to learn about them and then figure out or try to resonate with that person that they have never really had that connection with. Like, there's some really deep stuff going here. And like, I love that cartoons today, particularly this one, are not afraid to broach those subjects and then do it in such a tasteful way.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't even say it's deep. I would say for people who have emotions and show them outwardly, this thing is cutting your jugular almost every single episode. It does not pull any punches when it comes to feels, man.
Oh, no.
None.
I absolutely agree.
No, there's feels every episode because Steven is written so well that he's fragile. You know, like a 10 or 11 year old should.
Like he's a boy, and he's dealing with all this stuff that would take any general kid and put them in the situation, and it would either cause them to completely collapse or rise above. And we're seeing him grow into this and rise above. Like there's an episode, and I don't know if it falls between 1 and 2 or not, but they are talking about how the gems don't age, and like they're talking about birthdays and stuff. And they're just like, this seems like a kid tradition. Like, we don't really understand why this is so important. And while he's trying to contemplate why it's so important to him, he starts to age. And, like, the more mature he gets about thinking about it, the older he gets. And then he gets so caught up in how old he is that his body is literally interpreting that. And because of his power of the gem, he's become old.
Yeah,
because he's half gem, the gems are worried because he could die. Like, he can't rematerialize and, like, charge like the gems can when they get fatally hurt or cracked. Like, they don't know what will happen to him if he ever reached that point, which I think keeps us all in suspense, too, because we don't know what this fusion of human gem will actually do. And, like, that episode really kind of had me thinking. I'm like, wow.
And like, not just that, but the situation... Because he's a hybrid and there's never been a hybrid gem before, nobody knows what the hell is going on.
It happens.
And so the reactions of the other gems is entirely realistic.
Pearls, I think, was the best in that episode.
I actually like Garnet's the best. We can separate that out, but yeah.
I mean, no.
Just because Garnet's my favorite. Too. That's the main thing for what she is and what she stands for, too.
I mean, I just think that was hilarious. I just thought for Pearl, and I'm assuming, Sis, that you've seen the episode that we're talking about.
I have.
Just for the whole setup and the payoff of, you know, here's this perfectly good pie, and you know, as the watcher, what's going to happen or what you assume is going to happen. And then she totally just kind of came off sad clown about it. And I'm like, there's so much angst in this now, and I can't help but laugh at it. But you're absolutely right. That's exactly raw emotion, the way that it would absolutely play out in reality. And the show does a great job of not only showing realness between this unit that we're looking at all the time. I think the outside characters have all branched out in the later season. I'm only halfway through, I'm going to assume, of season two. I have not started season three at all.
Well, let's do our cutoff at the end of season one. That's around episode 49-50.
Okay.
Yep.
I love it. And there's all these fan theories. Like, it's just kind of exploded, almost kind of in the same way like Adventure Time did.
And My Little Pony.
Like, people were looking to find all these intricate meanings, which I think is great. It really does expand people's minds to really think inside of the art that we're looking at, that we're perceiving as enjoyment, because there's obviously something down there that the people who create the stuff want us to find and interpret and God knows what else with it.
But at the same time, it's also still accessible to young kids because there are the moments of levity. You know, there's very few episodes that I've seen that don't have some kind of music in them. And usually Steven is a big part of that and a reason for that, because he is ultimately just a little ball of joy that sometimes experiences some sadness and tries to figure his way through it.
His pops is a musician, so it might be just natural to him to fall back on that.
You know, and yeah. I always find that to be so cute. Like the episode where they end up singing together and playing guitar together.
Oh, Steven and the Stevens.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such an adorable episode, and I had so many feels about it, you know, because Steven ultimately was questioning himself, and I thought that was so interesting and also something that was really, really beyond like the kids' scope. And that's one thing that I've noticed a lot lately, is that cartoons have taken a big return to being adult entertainment, somewhat scaled down to be accessible to kids versus the other way around. Like, you know, when I was growing up, cartoons were in prime time and they were all based on adult humor. They weren't for kids. They were for adult.
Yeah. We're talking shows. Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies and
exactly.
All that stuff right there.
Was,
hell yeah, man.
You know, and it was not for kids, and it ended up in, you know, the mid 80s and 90s becoming the babysitter and for a couple of generations. And so they had to kind of dumb it down and make it something that was accessible to kids, because, you know, then they could do it in the afternoon and it would be okay to run blocks for 4 or 5 hours. And parents would be comfortable letting their kids watch them because there wasn't any adult material in them. And I'm not saying that those cartoons were bad. They absolutely served their purpose and, you know, sparked an entire industry of young entertainment that then became educational entertainment. That's cool. But it's so great for me to see, especially in the last like 4 years, really, this focus on animated adult entertainment, you know, between all the stuff on Adult Swim and the majority of things that are now on Cartoon Network and have spilled over onto other networks. You know, you look at things like Archer and stuff like that, where normally a show like that would have been pitched, it would have been a live action, but there's so much more you can do and it becomes so much more entertaining and you can get away with so much more when you make it animated. And South Parks of the world. And those are more on the violent sex, you know, adult situation as far as politically incorrectness and stuff like that, which is enjoyable. And now you have the foil to that, the balance to that, of these really, really rich, deep, almost life lesson cartoons that are created with your My Little Ponies and the life lessons that are learned there and your Steven universes, I think, for sure, that fit into that. It's so interesting to see how that's embraced so quickly and starts running around. Like, I have seen people that I know don't watch anything above broadcast television having conversations about Steven Universe because their kid is watching it and they finally watched an episode with them and they were really taken aback and now they're watching it. That's their together time every week on Fridays, is to watch a new episode together. And that's just heartwarming to me. because, man, oh, man, like, I remember the stuff that we would watch with our mom that was, you know, our together time stuff. And it's the thing, I think, that, like, fueled my fandom, because we watched Trek and we watched anime.
Yep, we did.
That's what we did.
We watched Dragon Ball on Sundays.
Yep.
Sunday mornings.
Yep.
I remember.
And we watched Trek on Saturday night. Picard was the best. We had conversations about that, you know, and now here we do a podcast every week about video games and anime. Not surprising, you know?
Not in the least.
So I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, what fandoms and what comes out of people falling in love with Steven Universe right now, because it is everywhere. There are, like you mentioned earlier, Panda, I have seen so much on, like, DeviantArt, people creating their own panels to tell deeper stories. I saw one that popped up in my Facebook feed, and I was at work eating my lunch, and I read this panel that this artist had created about Steven having a breakdown with the gems. And I actually got teary at my desk. One of my pod mates had to ask me if I was okay and what happened. Because the panel basically was Steven, like, crying and you know, the gems were asking him what was wrong. And he's like, I know deep down you guys hate me. I know you do, because it's my fault. And it, like, that's where the graphic broke and I had to click on it to make it bigger in my Facebook feed. And then the rest of the panel, yeah, you know where I'm going.
Yeah,
and
I do.
And the panel pops up, and they're like, what's your fault? What are you talking about? And he's like, it's my fault that my mom is gone. You don't have her because I'm here, and I can never be her, and I know that. And I wish I could, but I just can't. I miss her every day, and I don't even know her. And, like, all the gems just grab around. I was like, Steven, we don't blame you. We don't blame anybody. Your mother loved you just as much as we do. And I was like, oh, feels. Yeah. Oh, the feels. The feels, the feels right now.
I can't hold the feels.
Yeah, I think everybody sums this show up wrong by saying this is essentially a mom harem, but it's more of aunties, actually, you know.
It really is. Like, they do feel like older aunties, you know, of the care. Like, none of them ever try to act like a mom replacement or a mom surrogate. And that would be an easy thing to do.
Absolutely.
Easy thing to write in this situation. In fact,
Pearl's probably the closest to actually doing that, too. Because, yeah, she's the overprotective one of the group. Mm-hmm. So.
But even at that, she backs off at the right points.
Well, not even that. I think she understands that there's limitations. Like, she knows. Because I think it's her at one point, where she's having a conversation with Amethyst and Garnet, and she's like, we don't know what's right for him. Like, she has that honest moment where she's like, you know, what do we know? Like, we're not human. Like, we don't get it. We're also still trying to learn what we need to teach him. And, like, I thought it was such a humbling moment that these
But the fact that they all knew, they all had the same idea, though. They all acknowledged it very quickly. So I thought that was cool. Which shows they have a cohesive effort in trying to take care of him.
Yeah, which is, I think, is quite moving. I think for me, of the episodes, I think literally because, I mean, I kind of came into the series halfway through because the Biffle was watching it. And he's like, your sister told you you'd like it. And I'm like, I know, and I'll get to it. And then I caught one. And I think it was the one where Lars is trying to get in with the cool kids, and there's, like, this moss that I guess Rose would take care of, and then it, like, started latching itself to people.
Yep.
And so I caught that one. I'm like, okay, I now need to know what led to this. So I had to go back. And when I got to, I think it's episode, it's called, like, Lion 3 Straight to DVD, because I like that they like to play with themselves. They like to be very meta about stuff. And I think Lion is probably one of the best freaking characters to date so far, because I have not seen further enough to know yet, but I dig Lion, like, super, super mucho. I want one. I want to lay on a lion or have a lion lay on my face where I nearly die, but, you know, several times.
You're kind of weird.
But you've seen the episode, and it's...
I have.
It'd be a cute way to go. Like, come on.
If it was that lion...
Not if it was like, that lion, not a real lion. No, yeah. But like a big fluffy cotton candy lion. Like, I'll go out that way. I don't mind. But I love that, you know, in that particular episode, like when Steven finds this VHS, which totally states that that we're not dealing in current time, which I like. And he just listens, you know, and he finds somebody to, like, play it. And, you know, it's Rose, and she's just talking to Steven before he's even here and just explaining what's about to happen. It was such...
I cried.
I cried so hard. Because, I mean, I'm sure that there are moments in people's lives where they wish they had that smoking gun, like that little piece of something that justifies, not even justifies, but just makes a sharp point in a truth a little less sharp. And you just, you hear that it wasn't just a, oh, I'm going to do this thing. Like, she sounds so heartfelt and excited that she was going to, you know, she was giving up this one form, but she was going to live on in him. Like, it was so moving. And I'm like, kids don't understand what they have in shows today. If all shows could be like this.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, they can. They're called soaps.
It was true.
Literally, but, this is a soap opera. That's why it hit you in the feels so hard.
If
this
man.
Girl wrote daytime drama, you wouldn't have a prayer.
I wouldn't. Not one. Like, everything is just...
We're talking about Rebecca Sugar, by the way, the creator of the show.
So. And I mean, I have so many freaking theories, which I've been trying not to, like, delve into, like, the Reddit streams or anything about. I mean, like, with the whole idea of fusions, which I am so about in, like, the weirdest way.
I love the fusions.
There's an episode, which I didn't even see it until the boyfriend made me rewatch it, but I think it's the one where Connie's parents don't want Connie hanging out with Steven until they've met Steven's parents, which are kind of hard to explain. And he's trying to figure out which Jem could go and be mom. And he decides, hey, why don't you guys just all fuse together and you can all go? Which sounds okay until you realize it's like an eight-armed giant woman.
Yeah, she essentially becomes a kaiju at that part. I think she's barely capable of speech just because of how much stuff is going on with that fusion.
Long story short, I mean, you guys have seen it, but for those who don't, you have to be in complete sync for a fusion to work. Very much like a fusion dance in DBZ. If you do it wrong, well,
yeah, that's the allegory I always use. It's just like the fusion dance, y'all. So,
you know, and you have to be in sync, and the dancing and the rhythmic all have something to do with it. And they're so, like, they all want to nail this for Steven, and you've got all these compiling, you know, these three different mindsets in this one body, and it obviously doesn't work after one point, and they split. And it's for a brief second, which my boyfriend had to pause for me, because when they're starting to defuse, you can see the gems in this glowy thing, and there's four of them. And I didn't think of this right away, and I saw it. I'm like, wait a minute, but there's only three.
Wait, are we going to go into that spoiler or no?
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm going to, because it blew my mind.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, let's hold that one specifically for when we talk about the characters, because that's the main thing I wanted to get into.
Okay, then I'll pause now, because we should talk about the characters so that we could talk about this, because it literally let my mind, like, sifted through my ears and dripped onto my very nice shirt that I then had to wash.
All right, yeah. Well, let's do it, because we need to have that conversation.
Yeah, like, number one, everything that we're talking about was already foreshadowed in the show if you paid attention to background and stuff like that. They were telling you what was going on, but you had to catch the – and they're very small and minute, but they were there. You know, so, of course, hindsight's 20/20. So when you see videos that talk about it, they'll highlight everything, and you'll be like, oh, yeah. You know,
I'm going to go and look at those, because this moment I was like, I now need to figure out –
Yeah, like, because all the stuff, all the YouTube videos that were before that episode talk about it. So you'll still see those scattered amongst the web. But anyway, number one, the main thing that I pulled from the show, the character designs, like, holy crap. One, despite her being nearly almost 8 feet tall, but Rose Quartz was a thick girl.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was cool. A position of leadership. She's not built like a drop-dead gorgeous model. She's just an average thick girl who just happens to be 8 feet tall. And I thought that was kind of, you know, groundbreaking. It's like, hey, how about that? A positive role model that's not in the perfect model shape. How about that? And it goes for all of them. Garnet's probably the closest to it. You know, Pearl is rail thin. Mainly, you know, they have the picture of a ballerina for Pearl. So she's very thin. Yeah, and pale. And then Amethyst, who's straight up ghetto thick, you know.
she's a roundaway girl.
Yeah,
she's
exactly. Fast. Yeah, she's like 5 foot tall and thick and loves it and knows exactly what she's working with. You know, so the sense that they have the four major body types of any female you could pick for the United States. on the show at one time. I thought that was pretty noteworthy for me because you won't really see that in too many other shows.
Oh, you won't.
Yeah. And then two, afro hair. Holy crap. The moment I saw Garnet, I was in love with this show because she had afro. That afro is tremendous.
I love
tremendous.
That she's freaking voiced by Estelle.
Yeah, a British singer. So not only, you know, like a minority British singer, so that voice just cuts through everything as being a stoic character. Whenever she speaks, you can't mistake who it is. It's brilliant.
Not at all.
Yeah. And then Amethyst being because she's the youngest of them, has a playful personality and everything else like that, is more like Steven than the others. You know, and Pearl being somewhat of a techie, being, you know, perfect with everything she does. You know,
well,
they come.
I love space.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Going into the fusions, and I'll roll this in the Garnet in a minute. On top of that, the gems are hard-like constructs. So they essentially are just a gem attached to whatever form they choose to take that feels natural to them. Granted, they are genderless, but of course they're all in female form, so why not? Right. But when they choose to fuse, it's a combination between those two to make a new form. That's why the being in sync is so important. And Garnet is a walking example of fusion in harmony. Because she's two gems fusing the one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the two gems they picked to do that are literally like the worst. It's literally like the most troublesome relationship you could ever picture.
I imagine, and I don't know who, but I just imagine if I had to sit there and think of to make a completely stoic, neutral appearing character, I'd imagine you'd have to have like a very rugged, ballsy kind of character with an equally passive and peaceful one. Like you'd have to have the extremes of both sides.
Yeah, it's like if you saw a guy and a girl like this, you would say that's a horrible relationship. They're just going to tear each other apart. But because when they're together, it's great. But when they're apart, it's nightmarish. You know, that type of couple.
That's what I imagine. But I don't know who.
We just have to take a step back here because. Did you just say that Garnet is a fused gem?
Yes.
Correct. She has two gems, which means she is two people fused.
Which is actually kind of funny because when you look at what she uses
for
her ability.
Is that why she has three eyes?
Yes.
Damn it!
And her gauntlets, her gems are in her hands.
Yeah, so when they're separate.
She has two gems in her hands.
Yeah, so when they're separate, one has the left and one has the right.
Yeah.
Every time they fuse, the gems don't move in their physical positions to where they normally are. So anytime Pearl fuses, there will be a pearl on the forehead. Anytime Amethyst fuses, there will be a gem on the chest. You know, so on and so forth.
So, and I mean, in the second season, we see a couple more fusions. We see Opal, which is...
Well, she's in the first season, so we can talk about Opal.
So we see her. We see Sugarlight, who...
Yeah, Sugarlight. Oh, yeah, when they whipped out... When they whipped out Nicki Minaj for Sugarlight,
I
thought that was the perfect choice for that particular character.
I agree.
Garnet and Amethyst fused together. That's the most ghetto fabulous woman you could ever pick.
I about fell out.
Oh, my God. I mean, I somewhat knew it was her when she spoke, but then I saw the stories that it was actually Nicki Minaj. So I was like, why not? Why the hell not?
and then there's the one with all three of them.
Yeah, I forgot what they that with that one, but it's an actual gem. All the gems' names are actual gemstones.
Yeah,
yeah. So I thought that was pretty clever.
So I mean, like that moment, seeing that split and seeing those four, which, like I said, my boyfriend had to rewind it and then pause it for me to see, and I was like, "What the hell is going on?" He's like, "You're gonna have to wait and see," and I'm like, "I hate you." I'm like, "It," you know, and it made some sense, and then I was like, "No," I'm like, "I." Like, I think the first thing in my mind was, so wait, if there's two, like, why don't they ever, like, defuse? Like, that has to be tiring, as we saw with, you know, and always living in that balance. Because, I mean, in Opal's case, like, we saw them come together to help Steven, but they couldn't maintain that. So, like, these two entities that are obviously polar opposites being able
to... Amethyst and Pearl is Opal, by the way, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's the episode Giant Woman. So that's the first time you see any fusion.
And like, oh, like I just want to see them all fuse. I want to see all of them do all the things. And then, I mean, with the whole idea of Steven being half gem, which we then see a potential side for that.
Mm-hmm.
Just it, like I want to see more, just more.
But not just that. But at the end of season one, if you there's a major change in Garnet's outward personality towards Steven after that. But once you realize what Garnet is and what Steven did for them, I can entirely see them expressing that much emotion when it comes to dealing with Steven.
So, I know. I have noticed that it seems like... Because, I mean, I'm not... I don't want
to... I mean, yeah, it's like I'm trying not to spoil anything. Because right. For anybody who hasn't... Well, especially for the folks on the podcast, I don't want to spoil
Garnet is one way. Like, mm-hmm. She's not, you know, no, no, no. She's not yes, yes, yes. She's just kind of, well, let's see what happens and play it out.
Yeah, she's a stoic character that has future sight. So she can see all the possibilities, but she's trying not to influence Steven by knowing all that. And that's a story point later on where she comes across that. But knowing what she is and what she can do, everybody acknowledges her ability to lead the group because she has that future sight. And, you know, she's the one that's basically dictating what kind of cleanup they have to do. But on top of that, the fact that she's a perfect unification of two beings – you know, she's literally the walking example of a relationship going well.
Which is, I think, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Of all of them for it to be, I love that it's Garnet.
Yeah. And then on top of that, and the Garnet being the other point I had, Yuri themes in this show.
Oh,
in a
yeah.
show that's for kids of this age, done in a positive way, and not just for the sake of it. Like, anytime you see Garnet separated, and you see how they deal with each other. That's the most positive relationship I've ever seen on TV, including open mouth.
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
But I won't tell you what happens there. But it's the best example of a positive lesbian-like relationship I've seen on TV in this form.
Okay.
Yeah. You've seen Sailor Moon and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that was mainly fan service-y as far as its level of depth. As portrayal. No, they're talking about what's going on between them on the show. So I thought that was tremendous. That's probably the most LGBT positive thing I've seen in a kid show in a long time.
And, you know, that's the thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. we've been talking this entire time. It's a kid show. And the overriding themes are all about caring for each other, acceptance of people for their faults as well as their strengths. Like, they're all adult themes, and they're all delivered in these tiny packages because it's only a half hour show.
No, each episode is only 11 minutes. They do this in 11 minutes.
I marathon them, so they ran like a half hour for me. But it's a tiny show, and so to pack all of this up in such a short amount of time that never feels rushed, that never feels like, you know, those super short animes that you're just like the
yeah the five song 10 minute gang yeah,
yeah the
10 minute gang anime
than, so. Yeah, that it's astounding to me just how much is delivered in the runtime and well and always thoughtful. You know, the theme of acceptance, I think, is one that's important to instill in children, and to have, you know, a relationship between characters like the ones that make up Garnet, to have the non-traditional home where the mom is away and dad's not, you know, stepped up to fill that role. He's kind of off doing
him. Dad's still trying to grow up himself. Like,
Well, not just that, too. He still has a very good positive influence on him. It's just because of what he happens to be, he's not the best one to help him grow up because he is part gem.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. He wants him – he would rather have Steven live with him, but he acknowledges what the situation is. And he states that in the show.
Yeah.
It's just – to me, mm-hmm. if you haven't caught Steven Universe, and I don't care how old you are. You're
Steven.
Doing yourself a huge disservice because, man, oh, man, it goes beyond entertainment for me.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely hits on an emotional level.
Yeah.
It heals better than his spit.
Yeah. Yeah. But also the point about this being 10 minutes, I don't think this show would be as good as it is if it was like a traditional length. I think the fact that it's 10 minutes long forces it to get to the point to where they don't have to stretch for time to make the plot last longer.
I absolutely agree. And I love that
every show has something meaningful in it.
Too. Like, mm-hmm. they make sure that they hit all their points and they don't mind leaving it at a rough cut. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll just be like, oh, well, that's done. The end. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, it's not even the end. It's more like it's just nonstop cliffhangers until they get to a hard end, which is usually like around the end of an arc or the end of the season.
Like it always feels like to me like we're like because they don't hard cut it or they don't just wrap up the whole like the moral of the story is it feels like an ongoing conversation. Like you're just moving on to the next thing that might just turn into a wacky adventure. Like there's no definitive set. Oh, well, we solved this problem now when we know that there's this over looming big problem that's coming, which from the episode that I landed on clearly in this next season, because we've seen other gems besides these three and Steven and like little clips of Rose here and there. We've interacted with other gems that have been on Earth or in other parallel universes that they've traveled to while doing missions and stuff. So clearly, it just goes to show that the gems are widely spread, and perhaps maybe, and this is just my assumption, I feel like we might be seeing another revisitation to what they were initially planning to do.
Oh, I know what it is. They showed it.
I don't know it yet, but from
I'm not gonna say it because you guys got to see it for yourself. But it that's the other thing about this show. The main overall arc is interesting. I want to know where it goes. So, but that's the type of guy I am. I'll watch a bad show if the show's arc hooks me. It's like I just got to know where it ends. I don't really care about the show, but I got to know where it ends. You know that type of thing. So
you got to finish what you start, right?
Exactly.
Yep, you gotta finish what you start. I love the wrap up.
See how I brought it back to the thing at the time, and I did the thing. Guys, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I said it before. I'll say it again. If you have not watched Steven Universe, do yourself a favor, fix your life, and watch it. You can catch season one if you don't have cable, but you do have the internet. On Hulu, on YouTube, it's pretty much all over the place. You can
even more nefarious locations if you want to get current.
If you want to, you can do that for sure. Yeah. We won't judge, but definitely do yourself a favor and check it out. It is so worth the watch. And then hit us up on social and let us know what you think about it.
As you know, Activision last week put out a press release explaining that they were going to stop developing skating games for a while and that they were no longer going to develop the Hero franchise, which means no more Guitar Hero, no more Band Hero, no more DJ Hero. Which pisses me off to no end because out of all the things I just mentioned there, DJ Hero was a game that I thought was a little bit unique and I actually really liked. Like, I have 1 and 2, and I really like 2. I've gotten one of the DLC packs because I like Tiesto a lot, like style. And I was really, really disappointed, you know, as you start looking at what the landscape for games is moving forward. You know, if Activision isn't going to make any Tony Hawk or Sean White games, they're not going to make any Hero games. I mean, what's left? It's just Call of Duty. They're just putting all of their dollars behind the Call of Duty franchise, and they don't even have the two guys who made Infinity Ward, working for them. And don't get me wrong, I thought that, you know, Black Ops looks great and it plays really well, but you can't be a one-trick pony.
Well, apparently they are.
You know, and so it's now created, I think, a ripple effect. You know, we got the word that there will not be a Mirror's Edge 2, that the development team's been pulled off it. They're working on it. Nope, it's been kiboshed because one didn't sell phenomenally well. It's like,
I think it's because they meshed two different genres that they didn't think would work, and then a lot of people were like, wow, this actually really kind of works for the story that they did.
But they didn't come out and buy it in the droves that the development house wanted. You know, now you've got dev cycles that are 3 and 4 years deep. So now games have to make multiple millions of dollars in order for them to be seen as a success.
Well, No, I don't actually fault that for the reason why they're not doing it. EA is on record saying unless we can, you know, exclusively exploit what we release, we really don't care. Which is, I think, Mirror's Edge was successful to a point, just not to the magnitude that they wanted.
Right.
They couldn't exploit it enough.
So, like, and I think that that's really a shame because, you know, while the independent games are definitely coming into their own, I would have to say that this last year, the last 2 years, you know, indie developers with the Xbox Marketplace for indie games and, you know, things like the Indiecade existing and things like that are definitely coming to their own, they're still not the best way to meet and reach the mainstream gamer.
Right.
And I think that, you know, it does not bode well for really creative or different games to get a chance to make it to the mainstream. You know, I loved Mirror's Edge. I didn't finish it, but I absolutely loved it. And, you know, if you can look at Mirror's Edge and look at what it has sold, I mean, even on the iDevice, the Mirror's Edge game is selling pretty decently, that if that can't hold weight, then what hope do I have that they will actually release Beyond Good and Evil 2?
Good point. That's very true.
You know, what hope do I have that, you know, there will be an additional Tomb Raider game that's not going to suck? I mean, Eidos, let's face it, they've kind of gone back and forth with the franchise of, okay, releasing a really good Tomb Raider game.
How much hope do I have that Diablo 3 will ever make it to the computer?
I mean, fuck, look what happened with Duke Nukem, for fuck's sake.
I mean, there'll be a Torchlight 3 before there's a Diablo 3.
You know, I get very nervous now that it, unless it is has a really marked implementation, that we're going to see some really unique games not happen. I mean, by going through this kind of measure, you wouldn't have had Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh,
because Ico didn't sell well. The Last Guardian. Exactly. So what's going to happen with The Last Guardian?
Oh my god, it was so cute and fuzzy.
I know, but Ico didn't sell well.
But keep in mind, those are being made by Japanese developers, not the U.S. They may not... because of the
not good all over. I mean, the gaming industry, as far as profits go, were down this year. Across the board, everybody was down this year. And so, you know, you've got to cut stuff. Some places. I mean, Project Gotham defined racing games on the Xbox 360. Bizarre Creation shut down.
I know, it seems like they wait till they get their shining meteor and then they pull out.
I Geometry Wars, I fucking love that game.
I know,
game.
That was great.
I own it on the DS. I got it on my Xbox. You know, it floors me to think that Bizarre is closed. They got shut down, you know. So I'm just very leery right now that we're having that shift again in the game industry. We're about to go back into a dark ages where it's just going to be the only things that really get any kind of marketing push and get greenlit and will actually make it out to market are just going to be franchise games.
Mm.
And that just, I think it stifles creativity. And, you know, it does not bode well for the industry because you don't have any new ideas. You know, by this mark, you wouldn't have anything like a Braid or Limbo.
Oh, I love Braid and Limbo.
Okay. You know, they're only going to exist on the indie side and, you know, they may not get a press release. They may not, you know, show up on a marketplace. I mean, you're gonna have to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody to slide you a code. You know, I am really disappointed in how it looks like the industry is arcing right now. That it's really only franchise things that are gonna get lit, and really how many
franchise
solid franchises
are gonna get lit.
I know,
only
but
Associated Press is gonna get access to really interesting things.
Let's not go there.
Let's go there.
Let's not go there. That's not what we're going to do. Because we're better than that.
They can EAD.
Okay, we're better than that.
EAD.
Stop it. But listen, you know, I just...
when you think about the franchise games that are out there right now that are doing well, that are not a music sim game, you got Black Ops Honor, you got Call of Duty, you got Ghost Recon.
And then what, they have that new one, Homefront, that's going to be coming out soon?
Yeah, Homefront's coming
out. Oh, I think that's going to...
You know, but then you've got... Well, we're not going to have any skating games. So you've got sports games.
Madden.
Okay, you've got your platformers, because Mario's not going anywhere.
No, Mario hasn't gone anywhere.
Okay, but I'll tell you this, looking at the way that this arc is going, if Child of Eden wasn't already Gold Master, I don't think that it would come out.
Probably not.
I think if it was still in development, it would have gotten cut.
It looked kind of interesting, especially since this is the first time I've seen any pictures of it.
You know, so I'm just really scared that, you know, not just for the music sim genre, because I love it. It's my shit. It's my go-to.
I know. Now what are you going to talk about on this show?
I know. I mean, seriously. Because after this month, they're not, you know, investing anymore in DLC for DJ Hero 2.
Yep.
So it's just going to be Rock Band for me, which, don't get me wrong, as far as, like, drumming and playing guitar, I prefer the sets and the songs that are in Rock Band. But I just am very afraid that we're, you know, just like we had the lull in the late 90s and we had a lull in the mid 80s, I'm afraid that we're about to have that again. And I don't know how long it's going to last, because none of the big three are working on next-gen consoles, so it's not like we have new hardware that we're going to be building new ideas upon. It's going to be the same existing hardware, because I think that they're going to work on actually trying to push this hardware to its limits, which I think is great, because I'm not ready to get, you know, an Xbox 720 yet. Mm-hmm. But I don't want it to just be more of the same, and that's what I'm afraid is about to happen. It's just going to be more of the same. Okay, I mean, how many times can you fight Nazis in the war?
Well, that's why Treyarch went more modern, and
they were still getting their ass handed to them for it.
Well, I actually think that they were smart. I think Treyarch was really smart with this Call of Duty to go modern but not go current, because then it would have been like Modern Warfare 2. And I don't think I think people would have a hard time distinguishing between the game.
I can't distinguish between all those games, to be honest with you. Other than knowing what war that I'm fighting, they're all the same to me. It's pretty much first person, here are your weapons, kill the bad guys. Run, duck, grenade.
You're gonna find that in any game.
Except for the Nazi zombies.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. And I like the arcade style above.
Yeah.
Mini game that you can play.
It's like
a
bullet hell. It's awesome.
Yeah, I totally dig that.
Okay, but those are two aspects. I mean, right now, the shining beacon for me is Portal 2. Like, that's really the only unique thing that's been confirmed. Portal 2 and Child of Eden are pretty much the next things that I'm looking forward to. I don't have, like, a whole lot of other things. Because don't get me wrong, I'm so there for Gears 3.
I know. We got our Bulletstorm Epic Editions with our...
I can't wait to play Bulletstorm this week. I think that Bulletstorm...
I still say you should just be renting that one.
You know what? Here's the thing.
She likes beat-em-ups.
I do. I've always loved mindless
violence.
I mean, I spent hundreds of dollars in the arcade playing Double Dragons and, you know, Final Fury. I fucking love brawlers. Okay, you're talking to one of the few people in the U.S. who actually bought the Bouncer on PS2 when it came out.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and then you let me play it.
Yeah, and I didn't let you play it till I made it all the fucking way through it twice. Okay, so I love brawlers. So to me, Bulletstorm is just kind of a big fucking brawler with fucking amazing weapons. Okay,
it's just more explosions. Now that you mentioned it,
well, you can't play it on your PS2.
No, but I have a PS2 still.
Okay,
I kept my consoles.
You know,
damn.
It's got me. But as far as like something unique that's not an existing franchise, because to me, to be honest with you, I can't really tell an Epic game apart from another Epic game. As far as
beefy dudes with thick necks, guns with possible knives and/or chainsaws.
Yep.
Foul
language, which I'm okay with.
counterpart anti-heroes.
Yep.
And random witty humor.
Go.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'll wait until Space Marine comes out.
Okay. You know, I mean, it's a fine recipe. Okay. I don't fault the recipe at all. I fucking love Cliffy B because he's made some entertaining games, but again, it's more of the same. I mean, Gears 3 is going to be more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to be Gears 2 plus.
Yeah, but it's not even about the game mechanics, I think, for Gears. I think...
For me, Gears 3 is completion of the story.
Yeah. It's the end of a story that we really just want to know.
Go. Okay?
You know, for Gears 3, for me, because the only reason to really play Gears, if you're not playing it for the multiplayer, is to finish the story. I'll wait for a Let's Play on YouTube, to tell you the truth.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I don't have to physically go through it to finish the story. I mean, the gameplay is going to match it to some degree. Otherwise, it won't feel the same.
Right.
And I think they've pretty much done what they can with that. I mean, you could always add more weapons and everything else, but the game core gameplay isn't going to change. So I have no real desire to play it because I'm not going to feel anything new. It's just going to be the completion of the story. So when the Let's Play comes out on YouTube, I'll be all good, to tell you it's true.
I mean, I'm really big on the multiplayer in Gears anyway. And I actually have Gears 1. I'm borrowing Gears 1 to go back into Gears 1 to get that story since I jumped into Gears 2. I have this habit with 2s, I think. Mm-hmm. And I do like the number. But
it's a good number.
I really like the multiplayer in 2. Like, I mean, as soon as Ninja let me borrow it, I pretty much was like, yeah, can I just have it?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm like, I'm going to buy all the downloadable packs. And I mean, if you take it back, then there's really no point in me buying these. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, yeah, go ahead. I guess you can have it. And I mean, I just immersed in it. I loved Horde mode. I never jumped into a multiplayer, you know, clan, quote unquote, as fast as I did in Gears. And I'm looking forward to that same camaraderie in 3.
Yeah, I played Halo. I've never finished the fight.
I don't know if I know anybody who's ever finished a Halo game.
I haven't finished the story.
Well, you know one. I finished
it. Oh, okay. Now I know one.
So now we know one. But I never finished the fight, and I don't play multiplayer in it because I always am, you know, like the lame duck, so I just
it's a bit too competitive for me on multiplayer for Halo. There's too many jits in there.
There really is. There really is. And so, you know, I keep looking at it all, and it's more the same, more the same, more the same. And I just am very afraid that we're going to lose kind of some of the creativeness and that thing that gives gaming its edge, where it should be considered an art form and a great storytelling vehicle. I think that we're going to lose that for a little while. Because to be honest, I haven't heard anything about Last Guardian since the last E3 we went to.
Well, that was my first and last, it seems.
Well, so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 years ago we went, there was the trailer, and everybody was like, holy shit, this needs to happen. Last year, Sony didn't say shit about Last Guardian. I don't know that it's still on. I can't get anybody to tell me anything about Beyond Good and Evil 2, and it needs to happen. I don't think it will now. And so, you know, now we're left with the reboot of Tomb Raider, which is supposed to harken back to the original Tomb Raider, you know, because it's a prequel. So pretty much, I'm thinking it's just going to be Tomb Raider 1.
But wait, didn't
they're actually doing an origin story, aren't they?
Yeah,
that's the reboot. The reboot is they're doing young Lara Croft. It's prequel, so it's Lara Croft before, you know, she becomes the badass and learns how to actually be
badass.
And her
boobs grow.
Right, it's before she gets the double D's. So I think
she's in puberty.
Yeah, so I think she's just a
so as the game progresses, she gets older and
probably they mature and they
gonna show her the acne?
I don't think that they'll show the acne, but I think we'll know that it's there.
Yeah, that would give it some validity artistic wise, as if they gave her some acne or whatever.
Oh,
or
they
like.
Won't do that.
You know,
I would give those guys mad props that they actually put somebody with acne up there.
I'm hopeful for the Mortal Kombat game.
Where
the fuck have you been? Do you actually read any of the stuff that I put on the website?
No.
Have you seen what kind of mechanic they're going for? Because if they go for the old school style feel of Mortal Kombat, I don't know if it's going to make it.
They're not going for the old style feel. It seems like they're borrowing some of the mechanics from Armageddon. as far as the combo system and the tag in and out that they borrowed from Tekken Tag, but bringing back a bunch of the old school characters. So, for instance, Sindel's in there, Melina and Katana are in there, as well as the green bitch.
Jade.
Thank you. And
well, it's got Liu Kang and Kung Lao, so my team ain't helping.
No, wait, we know but that Melina was just Liu a Kang. Clone of
yes,
Katana.
Yes, we know all this, but, you know, if you look at some of the gameplay, it just kind of feels like what everybody wanted Mortal Kombat 3 to be, it looks like this Mortal Kombat reboot is going to be. So it looks like that they're, you know, they're going back to just the straight, we're a fighter. We get
well,
it.
Well, as long as they don't go back to where the how Tao Fang played out, because that was their spiritual successor, and that didn't turn out too hot.
Yeah, no, they're not doing that. They're not doing that. So I'm pretty hopeful for that, because that franchise, I think, you know, definitely deserves a reboot, because let's face it, it changed the game for a lot of us as far as console fighters and what we thought that we should be able to do with a fighter on the console. So I really want that to get rebooted, but, you know, I'm looking at the landscape and I'm not seeing a whole lot of creativity. It seems like some of the interesting things that are happening with Kinect are all people all hacking it and homebrewing it. I don't see anything new coming from, you know, that camp. Where the fuck is my lightsaber game already?
Kinect has no legs. I could have told you that when that thing came out. I mean, it's the same exact thing that happened to the Wii.
You know, and the same thing with Move. So I'm like, okay, these were supposed to be the big things. I'm like, please tell me that 3D isn't it, because I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast or not. I'm not interested in 3D at all.
Nope.
So, if that's what your next creative is going to be, you can just leave me out.
I think the only thing that makes Kinect viable, one, I really
Dance
do,
Central?
Is really, it's Dance Central and
I
the
fucking love
stuff.
Dance Central.
So, I mean, I think your fitness and Dance Central is what the Wii
wanted to be. And they couldn't quite make it work out.
Yeah, not
they couldn't
the way
walk
they
it out.
But it's a yeah. And it didn't teach them how to Dougie.
It did teach them how to Dougie at all.
God. But I think that's really about it. Because you're right. The same motions are probably going to be the same type of mechanic. I can't see them really reformatting that in a gameplay that will be new and stimulating to us. I mean, a lot of gamers like to sit comfy on their plush couches
you
that they spend
right.
a lot of money on. And now we have to get...
Look, my game chair's right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, now you got to stand up.
No,
like,
I'm going to
the things I think that would really make this the Kinect appeal across the entire scale for gaming, I don't think is possible with its current level of technology. Mainly, like, for example, everybody remembers Steel Battalion, right?
Yep.
$200 controller for controlling a mech that they virtually did nothing with. And I'm not talking about that they didn't make any other games with. The controller, only half of it was used a lot.
Yep.
Everything else was only used during the starting sequence. They didn't take full use of that controller. If you integrated that style of a game with Kinect features for, like, turning things on and off, you'd have to raise your hand to a certain position. It's like, you know, it's like, to shut down the reactor, you raise your hand to this position because this is where the console would be. And after a few playthroughs, people just naturally remember that. So next thing you know, even though they're using the controller, they're controlling secondary functions by using the Kinect's interface would integrate
oh God,
the game
really
even
cool
further.
Because then when we're all in space,
mm-hmm.
when we're using those holographic things, we'll already be like conditioned.
Yeah, but the Kinect can't handle that. I mean, hell, we have a hard enough time getting the Kinect to track us because we're short.
No, you're short.
Fuck you.
Speak
you
for
guys
yourself.
Just lost that, good lord.
But yeah, so I mean, what the only thing that Kinect has going is really is that
dance
game,
Central.
Which already you know
shape.
Is greenlit for two, and the Your
yeah.
Shape. And that's really mm-hmm. about it. I mean, I guess Kinectimals for kids, but after they turn 8, they're like, fuck this shit.
Exactly.
Where are the boobs at?
Exactly.
Yeah. More or less.
Dick tits!
If they went old school with for instance like the Move and like licensed like Crossbow and like Lucky and Wild and half these other like arcade shooters that are made for that kind of tactile sense, then they actually might be able to do more with that because it's using a combination of both technologies together.
But they won't.
Yeah, they
won't. I don't see that happening anytime soon.
I mean, they pulled their development team off of the additional DLC things that they were doing for Heavy Rain to go back and make Heavy Rain move compatible. That shows you where Sony's mind is.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like everyone's mind is not necessarily on moving the platform forward.
Yeah, it's a pissing contest.
It really is. And you
like,
know
look what?
What
I can do. Yeah, well, I can do it better. No,
yeah.
You can't.
No, you can't.
So 14 letters, beat that. Yeah, so.
You know, so that's...
Triple words, Gore, bitch.
I think that we're about to see that, you know, the real innovation is going to happen on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's...
They might sneak behind the big three while they're complaining.
I think so, because, you know, I think that because the platforms are all open, it's very easy to develop for Android. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to develop for iOS. You can reach a bunch of existing hardware that's there, and it doesn't take 4 years to develop something and get it out into a marketplace that is available to millions of people when you
and
put it all together.
And let's not forget the PC either, because Minecraft opened that one right open.
You know, I mean, the development... The areas being there, I think that's where you're going to see the next piece of your innovation, and you're going to find that the console guys are going to have to play catch-up.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
So
yeah, I giggled my head off when everybody say, oh, the consoles are just as good as the PC now. It's like, you people have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Nope, but
no,
they're
no,
gonna
because
eat,
they
they're
are
gonna
closed
eat those
environments.
Words.
It takes so much more to develop for them. And, you know, they're not going to want to put those resources now behind something that may not be a mega seller, so they're moving away from it, and I think that that's a mistake. And unfortunately, that then means that, you know, some of these titles that, you know, would definitely benefit from being developed on mobile aren't going to have a chance to move there because no one's going to be able to pick up the license. Like, I would love to have Mirror's Edge 2, and I'll tell you right now, if it was a PC game, I would fucking get a PC to play it.
You have one.
I know, but it would need a Mac.
If she was a fresh buyer.
Oh.
You know.
Because you have the Velocity Micro machine.
Yeah, I know. It needs a better graphics card, though. But, yeah, that's... I'm just really disappointed right now.
Oh, you know, we're kind of funny. Like, a lot of the time. When we don't mean to be. And also, like I said before, really wordy. We talk a lot. A lot. And you seem to like it, so that's good. That's a win-win, really, because everybody's happy. So I hope you enjoyed all of those clips from shows that we ran really long on time, and we'll more than likely do again, so there's more clip shows to come. And if you enjoyed this, then make sure that you check out all of our places where we put our content so you can enjoy those things too. That means subscribing to our podcast, which you can get a hold of on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also get a hold of it on your iOS device in the iTunes Music Store or on the podcast application on your iPhone or your tablet. You can also get a hold of our podcast on Google Play. You can also get a hold of our podcast in the Microsoft Store. You can also get a hold of our podcast in Stitcher. You can also find it on VogNetwork.com, as well as some other great shows as well. Like, we're all up in your interwebs. So wherever you go, make sure that you take Esh with you. You can also check out some great stuff that the team is writing on our website, like I mentioned before, electricsisterhood.com. You can also check out the other team members and the content that they create on their respective websites that make up the entire Land of Esh network. That includes b3crew.com, that includes Smash Rook, that includes the Issues Program, that includes the Structure Network. Visit all those sites, check out their content, subscribe to their RSS feeds. Make sure that you're hitting them up on the regular. There's great, great stuff about video games, music, TV show recaps, video, comic books, unboxing. Like, if you want to know what the deal really is with the Marvel Collector Core, then make sure that you check out the Structure Network. They've got great unboxings there. So with that, it's the time in the show where I usually say, hey, sis, what you're digging? But since she's not here, I'm just going to say that I'm digging you guys, I'm digging the holidays, and I'm digging being a gamer. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista. Peace.